Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Mr. Chris Hutting. Let's get into the first news story of today, and this is some follow-on from yesterday's GDP figures that shows that South Africa's mining industry is in a terrible, terrible state. Stats SA's latest GDP data for the final quarter of last year shows that capital expenditure in South African mining declined by 9.6% year-on-year in 2024. The Minerals Council of South Africa has called last year's fixed investment data, quote, a horror show. This is coming after CapEx investment barely grew in 2023, and that profitability in mining is down by a significant amount, by 18.5% in 2023 and by a further 1% in 2024. And I presume the 2023 figure has a lot to do with load shedding. But basically, Chris, it seems like no one is investing in new mines in a significant way in South Africa. And that means that our mining sector, which has already been shrinking for a long time, is in danger of pretty much ceasing to grow at all. It's had very bad couple of years. And not only is this bad for mining and all the jobs associated with that, but government revenue from mining is down by a significant amount as well. So it means less taxes, which means less services, less things that we need to pay for. What's your take on the story, Chris? How do we turn it around? And, you know, what led us here?
I definitely think it can be turned around. But again, it's going to boil down to the very boring and not sexy work of government, of difficult political changes, of policy changes and legislative changes, not least of which getting some of the basics right. So what I mean when I talk about the boring work, it's not the ribbon cutting ceremonies. It's getting your ports working again. It's your railways. It's getting a handle on crime and security. It's getting those basics of what a state, which ought to have a monopoly on force, what a state should be able to do to build a broader environment and secure a broad environment where local and domestic investors are confident that they can invest real capital into the country. So this particular data on mining and mining capex, we're seeing in our gross fixed capital formation, for example, where the National Development Plan sets a target of 30% gross fixed capital formation as a percentage of GDP. The only time we got close to that was 21% in about 2008, 2009, in the lead up to the Soccer World Cup. So it was for those sorts of infrastructure projects. But if we don't get between, say, 20, 25% best case scenario, that shows you that the long-term confidence isn't in the economy, because that's the investment in your roads, your bridges, your mines, your heavy plant equipment, the sort of stuff that you can't take out easily overnight if you're worried about a specific country or a geographic location. So if property rights are secure, if there's low crime, if the ports and railways work, if you've got adequate labor supply, which we do, then that sort of fixed investment takes off. So those are it's not finding a silver bullet. I know we don't want to focus on these difficult things to fix because they've also been around for such a long time. There's incentives to keep it the situation as it is, especially for vested interests in government and in business. But when the situation persists, we're not going to see a real uptick in real mining activity. You'll still see some extractive elements. You'll see the real big mining houses, even globally, able to deal with these risks from a capital point of view. But there won't be real competition. There won't be tapping South Africa's mineral resources properly. And just the last point, your sectors like mining, manufacturing, those are ideal for a country with a lower to middle educated and skilled workforce, as is the case in South Africa. It's one thing for us to aim towards the financial sector, the more blue white collar work, for example. But that's not where we are, and we're not playing to those sectors, which should be our strength.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And of course, the human cost of this is very real too. You can just take a drive through big parts of the Northwest in particular, and you will find many towns who are surviving almost entirely off of the wealth that's flowing out of a mine, through the people that have direct jobs there, from the people who provide services to the miners, from the dependents that those miners are taking home money to. There's just huge social infrastructure built around these things. And as these mines over the past couple of years have declined or faded away or just not been invested in, those communities have gotten more and more difficult to live in. The potential for them to just either completely disappear or fall into sort of total poverty is ever present, which is another reason why, you know, this is not just a nice to have. This is not just a you know, a theoretical question. This is about the lives of real human beings. And that's why we need to change the investment environment to make the lives of those people better, and that they are able to see a future where their children live comfortably and safely. All right, let's move on to our next story. And this is about President Cyril Ramaphosa, who is very keen on the upcoming G20 summit to be held in Gauteng, namely in Johannesburg and Ekurhuleni. But he's not so pleased about the state of some of those municipalities. In fairly soft criticism, while addressing an oversight visit of national government to Gauteng before the G20 summit, he said, "Of the two meetings I attended, the environment was not very pleasuring. I say that so that we can improve immensely. As South Africans, we are proud people. Let us get that self-pride to lift us up so that we present a G20 that will wow people. This is so that when people look at what we offer, they will just say, wow, this is how South Africans do it." However, he also took the time to defend Johannesburg Mayor Dado Marrero, who has said that he is going to be prioritizing the routes around which the G20 delegates will travel, saying that Ramaphosa said, "As we do in the African tradition, when visitors come, we must make sure our abode, poor as it might be, becomes presentable and gives a good look feel. The hospitality we roll out, the friendly disposition must be there. As these meetings happen, it is an opportunity for Gauteng to gear up and demonstrate. We did not make a mistake when we chose Gauteng to be the host of G20. You need to show we were correct in identifying Gauteng, and particularly Johannesburg, to be the host, and it should be seen as such." He wants people across the world to think that South Africa is this great place where important decisions were made. And so he's trying to sort of frame this as almost like a kind of cultural duty that we have to make life better for our visitors. But the reason we're hosting the G20 summit is so that he can promote his prestige on the global stage. The benefits for South Africa, I think, are far and few between, particularly when this G20 summit is already turning out to be such a sort of flop. The global institutions are all in chaos at the moment. The Americans aren't showing up. The Europeans don't want to be photographed with the Russians. The Japanese aren't even sending particularly high-level delegations, as far as I'm aware, or they didn't send their finance minister. And so it's entirely a protecting the image of the government and a vanity project. This is nothing about South Africa's image. This is about Cyril Ramaphosa and the ANC's image. And welcome, Mr. President, to noticing that Johannesburg is not in a great state. A lot of people have been saying that for a long time. But, you know, I'm glad that it's finally on the radar now that your prestige is at risk. That's a bit more of a rant than a question, Chris, but do you have anything to add?
No, it might be a second rant that follows yours. But, I mean, just yesterday, we had seriously heavy storms in parts of northern Johannesburg. I mean, you had videos of people's walls washing away, that sort of thing. Now, that does happen every now and then, but this did seem quite more intense. And part of that is lack of maintenance in things like drainage, for example. So, again, the basics, having the systems in place to deal with when this sort of thing happens, as happens in Gauteng and the Highveld when we have our intense thunderstorms afternoon after afternoon. So for those citizens who live in Johannesburg, they're having to deal with the failure of service delivery by municipal metro governments for a long time now. When President Ramaphosa comes to visit, and maybe what was clear here is that he spends most of his time in other parts of the country, if he's so surprised and shocked and dismayed by the state of Johannesburg. So where is he spending most of his time? Just on the mayor, and the link I'm drawing might be way too tenuous, so I apologize. But in football, when the owner of a team expresses confidence in a manager, you know that manager's time is very well up. So I wonder if there's something in the works here about the mayor of Johannesburg, that the president is expressing confidence in him, things are happening, things will work. But there could be some changes afoot in that regard. And it could just be a reshuffle. So I'm not saying that would fix the deep issues. But this points to the pressures that the ANC especially feel. From the 2019 to the 2024 elections, the ANC went from just above 50% in Gauteng to about 34%. And they haven't really, in my analysis and estimation, just in terms of basic service of delivery, done anything to arrest that situation. Just over the last 2 weeks, they've reshuffled Gauteng and KZN provincial leadership. But that doesn't mean that you're going to address the deep structural issues for the ANC, number one, but also how they handle themselves in the provincial government.
Exactly. If the current trends continue, when it comes to the ANC in the next local government election, Joburg is going to be an electoral bloodbath if they don't turn at least something around in between now and then. And Dado Moreira has not demonstrated a lot of interest in doing so far. I see also that City Power, which is the power utility in Johannesburg, says that they had 5,000 outage-related queries following heavy rains in Joburg last night. Now, you know, that may be down to the rain, but my heart goes out to everyone whose power is out in Joburg at the moment, because I have a feeling that the city of Joburg is going to struggle to make sure that absolutely everyone is turned on. All right, let's go on to our very last story very quickly. And this is Nompololelo Nene, who is the suspended National Lotteries Commission company secretary, has resigned from her post. She was put on suspension back in November of 2022 with full pay. And she was facing 145 disciplinary charges for alleged failures to uphold the interests of the National Lottery Commission, ensure proper financial management and internal controls, ensure transparency and use of resources. She was also charged with allegedly misusing the property and assets. The reporting by GroundUp says that she launched a, quote, Stalingrad-like legal defense to halt the internal disciplinary inquiry, and when the whole thing didn't really work, she appears to have resigned, having been paid during her suspension 6 million rand. Now, Chris, there's two aspects to this. The one is the general kind of lack of accountability and failure to properly go through with a disciplinary process for someone who had some very serious charges against them. How can it possibly take this long? I know that the Stalingrad strategy has been proven to work in quite a few cases, but one suspects that the Lotteries Commission and the government could have done more here. And two, the lottery has become, you know, I think it's in many ways an immoral institution at the moment. It's a government-run lottery. You know, it's one thing to have a privately run lottery that is trying to make a profit and that people can engage in or not if they want to. But it feels very strange to have the government trying to encourage people to play the lottery. And the money that's, you know, the huge profits made from the lottery are supposed to go towards uplifting communities, to give something back. So, yes, you know, you may have lots of very poor people often taking a chance of the lottery, which is not great because, you know, they're spending money. They often don't have a lot in the hope that something will change. But it's maybe a little bit better if that money is actually going. But we've seen so many corruption scandals around the lottery over the last couple of years. This is an institution that is clearly in crisis. And I wonder whether we should just scrap it completely and just say that private companies can create lotteries.
I'm very much partial to your proposed solution, especially just the point around if you assume best case that this is set up with the intention of providing some funding for charities or sports development or something, where is that money actually going? If you just take this particular example of someone who's since 2022 has been enjoying things, you know, quite well. I think it's a classic example of the perverse incentives that occur when you set the state up to run a particular department or agency like this, because there aren't the incentives to be market sensitive, to make the right decisions to run it, for example, like a company or a private charity, to deal with those issues when you don't conduct yourself well internally, if you don't audit things correctly, if you don't make sure you know where the money goes. There's none of those internal mechanisms and market signals when you then fail, for example, so as a private lottery or charity would, and then be forced to close down in all likelihood. This does link to our previous story, where President Ramaphosa also told Gauteng officials in the Gauteng legislature, he said he was cracking the whip. And this, you know, this links to this national lottery story, where there's talk of accountability, talk of holding people responsible for when they fail. But when the rubber hits the road, worst case, someone gets quote unquote reassigned or get given a different position. They're not actually
redeployed. Is the ANC's favorite term? Yes,
parachuted in elsewhere. So it continues that trend line. Hopefully, there'll be some element of better governance here, but the incentives aren't there, I think, in that case.
Yeah, and I the story that always sticks in my mind is of I believe it was an old age home that the lottery was supposed to fund and build in Limpopo. and nothing happened. Not a single piece of ground or foundation was laid for that thing. Anyway, we will keep an eye on that, and let us know in the comments what you think about the National Lottery. With that, I think we're going to call it to a close. Thank you very much for watching today. We hope you found the show interesting. That's a wrap.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.